True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco.
Happy Kokomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line and Kugels. More on their great variety of beverages later on in the podcast. Frank Stanfield joined by the solo podcast host extraordinaire, Scott White. The people loved you, Scott. The soothing voice the other day. We got so many tweets and emails.
I know. I was told I could put babies to sleep. I think he meant it as a compliment.
I think so, too.
But yeah, I don't know. It was fun. It was the people were kind. The people were kind in my moment of improvisation, and I relied heavily on your notes, Frank, because I would have no idea where to go next if I didn't have that as a blueprint for me.
Well, I appreciate that, Scott, and I mentioned on yesterday's podcast that was probably the first time you looked at my notes since we started working together.
Scott. I do pull them up when we're going through emails, at least, because okay. You know, people list off like six names, and how am I supposed to remember them all to answer the question? Right. Yeah, no, I don't pull them up every time. I happen to have pulled them up that time, and it made me think I should pull them up more often. Frankly,
it's all good, man. You are a professional. You don't need my notes. They're just for me to look at anyway. Today on the show, we have our Week 7 pitcher and hitter planners. We're going to talk about some struggling players. What do we do with them? Did you know? Got a few interesting facts for you. Interesting stats, rather. And we have some fantasy justice for all questions. Before we get to, oh my goodness gracious, Scott, I've got to let you opine on your man, John Means, the guy threw a no-hitter. You weren't on yesterday's podcast. So anything that you would like to say, congratulate, where you're moving him up to in the rankings? What do you got?
So I had moved him up to 36th in my starting pitcher rankings before the start. I should have moved him up more. I haven't done it yet, but I was just looking at it here before we went on. I think I want him more than even like Kenta Maeda at this point. Mm.
But that's more, that's a combination of Kenta Maeda just not looking like the pitcher he was last year too, right?
Well, sure. I mean, Kenta Maeda, I had him in the top 12 originally, but that moves Means into the top 30. And like, there's an argument to make him and Kevin Gausman, who I have in that range, Dylan Bundy, who I have in that range, Sandy Alcantara, who I have in that range. I mean, I could see moving him past all those guys up to 26, just behind Carlos Rodon. I don't know. Frankly, I'm a little stunned it's gone quite this well. And certainly he's found a new gear here, his last two starts in every respect, right down to the swinging strike rate. He hasn't had quite the velocity. He hasn't maintained quite the velocity jump he showed last year. It's been pointed out that, you know, when he was at his highest last year, it seemed to compromise his command. So maybe he's settled in the perfect spot. But really, just the way the changeup has taken off, that was another gear he found that has allowed him to really jump into the ace conversation here. And he's such a good control pitcher on top of it. I don't know. It's exciting stuff. I would not really be interested in selling high on him. Somebody suggested to me, well, somebody told me that they had traded, they had just traded him for Lucas Giolito. Okay, if you can sell that high, you know, I'm not moving means into my top 10 where Lucas Giolito is, but like, for the most part, I'm just really happy to have John Means. And John, he's a man of means.
Absolutely crushing it
up there.
Absolutely crushing it right now. Yeah, like the John Means business, like everyone's all over it now. So even I
know, and they don't even know where it came from. It came from me.
It came from Scott, man. We
started it.
We were talking about that back in, I don't know, October, November. His changeup, according to Pitch Values on Fangraphs, rates out as the best changeup in all of baseball. So it really has just elevated his entire game. Again, John Means, I do think, look, some regression is going to come. He's not going to pitch to a sub-2 ERA all season. He has a 100% strand rate at this point, Scott, and he still does pitch in Camden Yards. He's a fly ball pitcher, so there will be some regression, but that's pretty obvious. Let's get into the oh my goodness gracious players from Thursday.
Oh my goodness gracious!
All right, Scott, where would you like to start following John Means?
So, how about another lefty who doesn't throw all that hard, but he does throw harder than he used to, and that's Madison Bumgarner, who had another just great start. I mean, these aren't just okay. He looks like he might be okay. He starts from Madison Bumgarner, of course. With one was the 7-inning non-no-hitter, so obviously that one looked great. But in this one, 2 hits in 6 innings. Against the Marlins, okay, kind of an easy matchup, but that's a string of 4 starts for Madison Bumgarner where not only has his velocity been back to basically to pre-2020 levels, to where he was his last couple years in San Francisco when he was still obviously a fantasy asset. And not only has the velocity been back up for Madison Bumgarner, but the actual performance in those 4 starts, just 3 earned runs allowed, just 8 hits allowed in those 23 innings across those 4 starts. And he's even getting whiffs, had 15 on his 85 pitches against the Marlins today. You know, the last outing was against the Rockies outside of Coors Field, right? So, you know, that's another very easy matchup, obviously. But before that, it was the Braves, then he no-hit. I mean, they're the 5th-best team in the majors in OPS. It was the Nationals, who were at least middle of the pack in offense. It was, you know, it's not like he's just beating up on bottom feeders. And as I've said before, even if he did, doing it 4 straight, I mean, that's still a string of good luck if you're not a very good pitcher. I think Bumgarner's figured it out. I think he's figured it out. I think he's back to being a mixed league asset. He has 2 matchups this upcoming week. He's a 2-star pitcher. And I think everybody needs to get him active. He's going against these Marlins again and against the Nationals.
Yep. So two teams that he's looked great now against during this 4-game span. And he's maybe out there in 10 team leagues. He's 79% rostered on CBS. If he's out there, make sure to get him on your team. And I think he can come close to what he did back in 2019, 3.90 ERA, 1.13 whip, almost a strikeout per inning. The way that he's pitching right now, I don't think that would be egregious to say. So Madison Bumgarner, someone who's also rising up the rankings, we've got to move him up, Scott. I'm trying to think, how far do we move up Madison Bumgarner? I'd rather have him than Patrick Corbin, right? I mean, that's always kind of the measuring stick, right? I have Patrick Corbin at 60, and it's like, if I want this play, all right, he moves inside the top 60.
I already have past Corbin. I mean, he's
way past. Okay.
Way past Corbin.
Would you rather have Bumgarner or Robbie Ray, who has also looked very good over his last, I believe it's 3 starts now?
Yeah, I think I got to take Robbie Ray there.
Agreed.
But, I think Madison Bumgarner in like the Michael Pineda range seems about right. I think, you know, I think both of them are going to have, fall a little short in the strikeout area, but they're going to give you some volume. The whip should be pretty low. So yeah, I think moving him right inside my top 60, probably ahead of like Sean Manaea, Yeah, I think in between Tyone and Michael Pineda is where I would slot Bumgarner. So that would make him 56th for me.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a good spot. I would take him ahead of Germán Márquez, who has just been a disaster recently. But mm-hmm. I think I'd still rather have Danny Duffy, Sean Manaea, two guys that have looked really good so far this season. I seem to like Manaea a little bit more than everybody else.
But that's the same range. Duffy's just a few spots ahead. Dylan Cease would be ahead of Madison Bumgarner for me just because of the upside play there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's about the right area.
Let's talk about another lefty. A lot of lefty talks early in the podcast today. Andrew Heaney going up against the Tampa Bay Rays. He's my oh my goodness gracious player from Thursday. 6 2/3 shutout, 2 hits, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 110 pitches. Joe Maddon letting Andrew Heaney throw a ton of pitches in this start. 12 of those swinging strikes came on his fastball. And I will point out, going up against Tampa Bay, they are second in baseball. They have the second highest swinging strike rate in baseball, and they are 19th in weighted on base average against lefties. So it's a pretty good matchup for Andrew Heaney. It's hard for me to figure out what to say or do with him, Scott. I would say to add him. He is 66% rostered, but this is kind of what he does. He's going to give you a lot of strikeouts. He's inconsistent at times. He has 4 starts with 2 earned runs or less.
He's a two-faced, Frank. He's not just inconsistent. It's a total two-faced. Everybody in the world started Andrew Heaney last week against the Mariners.
Exactly.
What happened?
And it was a good
3 home runs.
It was a good matchup.
Everybody benched him.
But we can't ignore a 14.8% swinging strike rate. You know, Scott, it would rank 11th among starting pitchers if he qualified. It's really good.
Yeah. That'd be really good for a closer. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to stay that high all season. So that's the first thing. You know, Heaney has a 276 xFIP. That's amazing as well. And really, it is just, like, I know the history here. And so when I see him have a start like last time where he gives up 3 home runs, it's like, oh, here we go. Old Andrew Heaney at it again. But xFIP takes into account fly ball rate. Rather than home run rate, it kind of normalizes all fly balls, which is why I've gone to favoring xFIP versus FIP, which just strictly accounts for the home runs in an era where it's so easy to hit home runs. I thought fly ball was a better indicator of a pitcher's potential to give up home runs than his actual home run rate was. So, you know, kind of an aside. That's why I go with xFIP now instead of FIP. But anyway, the xFIP is below 3. The swinging strike rate, I imagine, is a career high. Yeah, though he's always had a good one of those. I don't know. He's somebody you might consider selling high on, because it's going to be difficult for me to have that level of trust in Heaney, particularly if you already have a lot of pitching depth. Like if you don't have much pitching depth and you know you're struggling to fill those pitcher spots every week, I think you know you don't have to play this game where you're moving Heaney in and out of the lineup based on the way his last start went. Mm-hmm. You know. And so that's probably the ideal scenario. But if you just know you're not going to be able to be that disciplined with him, and I don't blame you. I mean, look at his ERAs year by year. He's never had one below 4. Oh, he has had one below 4 back in 2015. But anyway, yeah. No, I think Heaney is somebody you could consider selling high on.
Would you rather have Heaney or Robbie Ray? Both are rostered in under 70% of CBS leagues.
I think I'd rather have Robbie Ray. Like, I think... You know, if you're just presenting their numbers to the marketplace, people should say Heaney's more valuable. But I don't know. I'm gonna have trouble trusting him.
No, I agree.
So I don't necessarily think you should drop Heaney for Ray if you're presented with that choice. I guess mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. But like, if you're given the choice to trade away one or the other, I'd rather trade away Heaney.
An honorable mention for the oh my goodness gracious to Zach Wheeler up against the Brewers. He threw a shutout, 3 hits, 8 strikeouts to 0 walks, 16 swinging strikes on 118 pitches. Another manager here, Joe Girardi, just letting Zach Wheeler go. Wheeler has thrown over 100 pitches in 4 of 7 starts this season. The ERA is down to 2.83. The WHIP is down to 0.97. And like many pitchers in baseball, Zach Wheeler is throwing his slider more than ever before. It's not a crazy number. Like these other guys are throwing it 40, 50% of the time. He's throwing it 23%, but it is up a little bit from the rest of his career. So shout out to Zach Wheeler. He's been, He's been very good so far this season. Before we get to news and notes, just wanted to let you know about what's on CBS Sports HQ next week. As always, CBS Sports HQ is your home to start your sports news day with live updates kicking off each morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. And HQ is always your home ahead of the evening's action with live picks from the best analysts and cappers in the sports world each day at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. On Wednesday next week, NFL experts will be breaking down the 2021 schedule, and our cappers will be making Preakness picks ahead of Saturday's race. So check out HQ on your computer on CBSSports.com or via the CBS Sports app on your mobile phone or TV. It's always free. It's always on CBS Sports HQ. News and notes. Byron Buxton left Thursday's game early and was diagnosed with a hip strain. He is currently day-to-day, and things are just popping up now, Scott. I'm rooting for the guy. He's really fun to watch, but we just can't ignore that things seem to pop up with Byron Buxton more than they do with most players, right? The average player in baseball. So hopefully he's all right, but this is the risk with Byron Buxton. Steven Strasburg threw 35 pitches in a simulated game on Thursday. Manager Dave Martinez declined to give a timetable for his return. The Angels released future Hall of Famer Albert Pujols on Thursday. He was batting just 198 this season, but apparently still wants to play. Scott, how does this affect the Angels? It seems like they just want Jared Walsh in the lineup more consistently. He's going to play first base. As of now, they have Juan Lagares in right field, but that's the thing.
They had Walsh in the lineup consistently already in right field, and he was doing fine out there, it seemed like.
I was watching the game just before, and they really like his defense at first base. He made a nice play on a double play, too, so he's probably...
That's fine. I'm sure he's better at first base than he is in right field, but I find it hard to believe that's the reason they let Pujols go, and when you consider... they have two outfield prospects knocking on the door. Joe Adell, of course, being the biggest one. Brandon Marsh as well. It makes you wonder if they're plotting a move there. Now, I would be kind of surprised if Joe Adell got called up in the next week, as bad as he was last year. I think, you know, I'm not looking at it like a Jared Kelnick situation, like a Wander Franco situation where it could basically be any day now. But I don't know. I mean, they have better ways of evaluating Adell than I do and the progress he's made. And he looked better at the plate this spring. So I don't know. I wonder also if they want to give somebody like Taylor Ward a shot, who has had good minor league numbers the past few years and was great this spring. And obviously, he's the one who actually got called up. I think he's pretty interesting. Taylor Ward, former catcher prospect. They've since moved into third base and since moved into the outfield, and he just hasn't quite gotten that extended look as an everyday player in the big leagues. It's just the stars haven't aligned for him. I think he's getting up there in age. He's 27 or 28 now, and maybe they want to give him a chance. They want to see what he can do before eventually turning it over to Adell, unless Ward doesn't let them do that because he's taken off. So he could steal some bases a little bit. So he's interesting. I'm not saying he's 12-team material or even 15-team material, but if he does start getting at bats for the Angels, I will want to monitor him.
Yeah, he is pretty interesting. He's 27 years old now, former first-round pick back in 2015. Taylor Ward is who we're talking about. And his last two minor league seasons, an OPS over 1,000 back in 2019 with 11 steals. That was in the PCL with the juice ball. But in 2018, he hit .349, 14 homers, 18 steals, .977 OPS. So just tuck that name away on your scout team for now, your watch list, whatever you call it. And Taylor Ward, someone to pay attention to. Brandon Marsh, someone you mentioned there, Scott, one of the top prospects in the organization. He's an outfielder. He isn't debuting in the minors until mid-May due to a shoulder injury. So yeah, everything you said about Adell, I would double down on that for Marsh. I think they're going to be pretty cautious with him. And if we see him, I don't think it's until June, probably July even. So I think they're going to be patient with Brandon Marsh. Any leagues where you should be stashing Joe Adell right now, Scott?
Oh, well, any 15-teamer for sure. I would say, let's see.
I think any 12-team category league or deeper with five outfielders, I would stash him.
Yeah, I'm thinking like 350 players rostered or more. Adell should be among them.
It sounded like Carlos Carrasco was getting close to returning, and then the Mets shifted him to the 60-day IL on Thursday, which means Carrasco cannot return until May 31st at the earliest. MLB Network's John Morosi reported that Mariners prospect Jared Kelenic isn't likely to debut in the majors until late May. More on Kelenic coming up in just a little bit. Gio Urshela left Thursday's game with a knee injury and is headed for an MRI. So if you play in any leagues where you can shift your lineup for the weekend, I know a lot of NFBC leagues do that and a few other leagues as well. Gio Urshela, you might want to get him out of your lineup. Hyunjin Ryu made his return from the IL. He gave up 4 runs over 5 innings against the A's, but did wind up with the win. Chris Davis, with a K, started a rehab assignment on Thursday. Scott, do you think this will affect Willie Calhoun's playing time, who just continues to mash? He had 2 more hits and a walk. He is batting .328.
I doubt it. Not in a significant way. They played Willie Calhoun a couple times in the outfield, and they're willing to do that. Why wouldn't they be, right? They're a rebuilding club. So, yeah, no, I doubt it'll affect Willie Calhoun's playing time much.
Wilson Ramos exited Thursday's game with lower back tightness. Gene Segura will be activated off the IL on Friday for the Phillies. Both Jazz Chisholm and Yadier Molina were cleared to resume baseball activities for their respective teams. Giants pitcher Tyler Beede is starting a rehab assignment at AAA as he returns from Tommy John surgery. He isn't eligible to come off the IL until late May. And Tyler Beede, Scott, he was kind of a sleeper candidate last year before he needed Tommy John surgery, before the whole season got shut down. And there was some excitement for him. So are you doing anything with Tyler Beede? Probably only in deeper leagues.
I mean, there was excitement for him in like a deep league. Maybe this could be a deep sleeper kind of guy in that respect. So coming back from Tommy John surgery and not even his first Tommy John surgery, I'm going to need to see a whole lot before I get excited about Tyler Beede again.
Max Stassi was placed on the 7-day IL with a concussion. And a few prospect updates. I mentioned Jared Kelenic. He homered off of a lefty in his first game at AAA. So I don't know, John Morosi. Maybe it's a little bit sooner than late May. We're all hoping so.
Well, I'm trying to find where you saw that. All I'm finding is, including one of John Morosi's own tweets, he's saying likely to debut later this month. Now you could interpret that a few different ways. Later this month is in,
that could be tomorrow.
The later portion of this month, or later this month as in some day beyond May 7th, you know? Like, you could interpret that either way, right?
I would agree with that. I did not double check the tweet myself. I scroll through CBS's player news updates, and that's where I get a lot of my news items from. So blame them, Scott.
Well, no, I'm not blaming you. I'm sorry. I knew when the words were coming out of my mouth, that's what it sounded like. I didn't mean it that way.
No, it's
cool.
I hope he comes to, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he does.
Well, because Jerry DePoto, the Mariners GM, said earlier today about Jared Kelenic. Let me see if I can find that. Okay, so he said it's time to take a look at Kelenic, and that's coming sooner than later. Again, there's not really much specificity there, but like, I don't know. I'm interpreting it as every day now. He said a couple weeks ago they wanted to see him show some improvement against left-handed pitchers, and so far he's acing that test at the alternate training site, was how he put it. I think they're dropping some hints here. It's going to be real soon.
Jared Kelenic is 76% rostered on CBS, likely not out there in any leagues, but just in case, get Jared Kelenic on your team. Giants outfield prospect Elliot Ramos has homered in 2 straight at AA, and he had a great spring training as well. Yankees first round pick in 2020, Austin Wells. He's a catcher, outfielder, hybrid. He's gone 4-for-9 with a home run, 5 RBI, 5 runs, and a stolen base through 2 games. Where? At low A ball. So we're not going to see him anytime soon. Email of the day. This is from Rosendo. If I wanted to move Shohei Ohtani in a league where he is one player that you either use at utility or at starting pitcher each week, more often than not, I'm guessing you're going to use him at utility. What should I target? How do you value him in a trade? Ohtani, of course, on Thursday hit his 10th home run of the season. He's batting .266 with 22 runs scored, 24 RBI, 6 steals. He's averaging 3.9 fantasy points per game, which is tied for 12th among hitters. So points league, roto, it doesn't matter. He's been awesome. He has the third highest max exit velocity this season, the highest barrel rate in baseball. He's got a 303 expected batting average, 698 expected slug. The guy's amazing, Scott. I would go as far as to say I think Ohtani is the most fun player to watch in baseball right now. But what do you do? How do you, if you're trying to sell high on him, you should be able to ask for a decent bid.
Yeah, you should. You should trade him. You have to value him according to who he is as a hitter. Because if you're not going to get pitcher production, I understand it. It actually adds to his value to have that little bit of flexibility. But like as things stand now, nobody's going to use that flexibility. They're just going to start him as a hitter. So I don't think it's reasonable to expect to value him beyond his value as a hitter. And that being said, he's been an awesome hitter. And, you know, despite him being tied for 12th among hitters in a points league, I think he holds a lot more value in categories leagues because the plate discipline really is not very good. And a big part of his value is that he runs so much. He's up to 6 steals already. And that power speed combo in a roto league, you know, it's hard to find. It's hard to find. It's very important. So I don't know. You'd have to target somebody really good. Like I'm thinking Kyle Tucker's been the go-to with outfielders, right? When you're selling high on a guy and you're buying, you know, the combo buy low, sell high, you're buying low on Tucker.
I wouldn't do it, Scott.
I will want to do it either. You got to go higher than that. So that's a top 15 outfielder for me. I don't think I'd trade Ohtani for Springer. I don't think I'd trade him for like Judge.
Nope.
If he was eligible in the outfield. I'm thinking he's top 5 right now. I don't think I'd trade Cody Bellinger for him or Christian Yelich. Wait, I don't think I'd trade him for Cody Bellinger.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I think the only way you're trying to trade Ohtani right now, Scott, is if you have a lot of holes. And there might be teams that do have a lot of holes with all the injuries that are going on. We spoke about this yesterday with Chris, and he said there was more people placed on the IL in April this year than the last two Aprils combined. So it's like there is a crazy amount of teams, fantasy teams, that have injuries and holes. So if I have Ohtani on a team where I'm struggling elsewhere, I would try to get, you know, two starting, viable, worthy players and two players that are like really good at a position. Maybe, you know, a top 15 outfielder and a top 20 starting pitcher, something like that.
Like, yeah, well, if you're, let's say, you could probably trade Ohtani for like a Kyle Tucker and
Luis Castillo.
Maybe a Carlos Rodon with him?
Yeah. I was thinking Luis Castillo. Do you think you could get Castillo and Kyle Tucker in a 2-for-1 giving up your Ohtani in a roto league? I don't think that's a crazy ask.
Do I think I'd want to?
Again, this is if you have holes, you know, Scott.
How good's my pitching already?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a reasonable ask. I think you could maybe even aim higher is what I'm saying with the pitcher.
Yeah. So look, the way that basically if the season ended today, or if we were playing out a 2-month season like we did last year, Shohei Ohtani might be a second or third round pick in next season's fantasy baseball draft. So that's, you know, currently what we're valuing him as. And of course he comes with injury risk. A lot of people do, but the guy is playing like one of the 10, 15 best hitters in fantasy baseball right now. So you should be able to ask for the world for Shohei Ohtani. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to get to the week 7 pitcher and hitter planners here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let's jump into the week 7 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Leinen Kugels. How is the schedule shaking out for next week? Well, 9 teams have 7 games, 18 teams have 6 games, and 3 lonely teams only play 5 games next week. The Chicago Cubs, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the New York Mets. By my estimation, the must-start hitters on those teams, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras, Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Justin Turner, Max Muncy, and Will Smith. Notice, I didn't mention any Mets. So I think they're kind of fringy right now, the way that they're playing, and they only have five games, Scott. So between, I put Chris Taylor in this mix too. Chris Taylor for five games and all the Mets hitters. Do you have to keep them in your lineup?
No. No, I mean, it's a question of how shallow the league is, of course. In a five outfielder league, am I sitting Michael Conforto? No, can't imagine doing that. In a league with a middle infield spot, they could be hard to imagine you have a way to not start Lindor. I know he's been awful, but there are only so many shortstops to go around. But if you're talking about a head-to-head lineup with only three outfield spots and just one spot around the infield, then yeah, you could be a little more judicious, I guess. Discerning.
Yeah, with the Mets
hitters. I thought you were gone again for a second.
I can leave, Scott, if you want.
PTSD.
Let's jump into some of those two-star pitchers, Scott, that you like heading into week seven. Who you got?
Okay, so it's actually a good week for two-star pitchers that might actually be available in your league. Robbie Ray, we just talked about earlier, coming off an amazing start. And really, two of his last three have been great. He's looking the best he's looked since 2017 when he was a fantasy ace, more or less. At Atlanta versus Philadelphia, you know, matchups aren't anything to write home about, but the bottom line is I think he's a really good pitcher and he's making two starts. Adbert Alzolay, now he's available in 65% of CBS sports leagues. Widely, widely available, and it needs to change. I think it'll change over the weekend because his matchups at Cleveland, at Detroit, it doesn't get better than Detroit. Detroit is a distant last in team OPS right now, so matchups don't get any better than that. And then Cleveland's a pretty good matchup too. Madison Bumgarner, who we mentioned earlier, Marlins and Nationals. Brady Singer, he gets the Tiger for one of his, the Tigers, that's not just one Tiger. It's 26 of them. He gets the Tigers for one of his two starts and the White Sox for the other. Jordan Montgomery, who he had one good start at the beginning of the season, right? He's been pretty blah. But at Tampa Bay, that's fine. At Baltimore, that's really good. It's available in 32% of leagues. I can keep going, man. It's a really good week for two-star pitchers here. Luis Garcia, now he's 85% available. He's kind of the deeper league play, I guess. But I actually, you know, he's probably going to be like seventh for me in my sleeper pitchers for this week. Luis Garcia gets the Angels. Okay, that's not so great. He gets the Rangers. That's really good. I think there's a lot of swing and miss there. I'm not sure how often he's going to go five innings, much less six, but like the strikeout ability for Luis Garcia. JT Brubaker, Cincinnati and San Francisco. Really good with the ground ball rate there. Those are probably the only ones worth highlighting. I think I've exhausted the list. Let me see if there are any borderline calls among those who are rostered in a lot of leagues. Okay, so Dylan Cease, you get him for two starts right away. One of them Kansas City. That's pretty good. Alex Wood, he survived that game at Coors Field, and now he gets the Rangers and Pirates.
Love that.
As his reward. Yep. Too late to pick him up. Maybe not in a Yahoo or ESPN league, but CBS, it's too late to pick him up. Oh, here's an interesting one. Chris Bassett at Boston, distant number one in OPS, and at Minnesota. I think you probably start him.
I think so, too. He's pitching really well.
Yeah, but those are tough matchups.
For sure.
What about Nathan Eovaldi? We haven't talked about his start today. He lines up for two next week, and the matchups are less than favorable, Oakland and the Angels. Three of his last four starts, Eovaldi has been bad. I think four earned runs or more in three of his last four starts.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, ERA rising from 208 to 462 during that time. Now, I still have him as a start. I'm not that worried about Eovaldi. Still at 328 xFIP on the year. That's really good. Like a mid-threes xFIP. You know, a stat that normalizes in that way to get mid-three ZRAs, I consider that to be pretty good. So to have a low three ZRA, low threes xFIP, 328, that's really good. Still a good swinging strike rate on the year. No, I don't really. I still see a lot to like in Evaldi, and I wouldn't be sitting him for a 2-start week. But I could understand with those matchups why he might be a little reluctant. I still rank him in my 2-start pitcher rankings. I still had him ahead of some of those sleepers I mentioned. I have him ahead of Brady Singer and Jordan Montgomery and Luis Garcia and JT Brubaker. So just keep that in mind. I do have him behind Alzolay if you want to pick up Alzolay and start him instead of Nate Evaldi.
Yeah, it seemed like Evaldi got babbipped a little bit on Thursday. He only allowed 3 hard hit balls against the Tigers, but somehow still gave up 6 earned runs. So I didn't get to check in on that game, but it seems like he was a little bit unlucky. The underlying numbers for Evaldi still really good this season. So those are some 2-start pitchers you can look at. Scott, how about a few single-start pitchers that might be available that you're looking at?
All right, so this isn't a very interesting group by comparison. I only have 2 1-start pitchers in my top 10 sleeper hitter, top 10 sleeper pitchers for week 7. I only have 2 1-start guys. And one of them's Taijuan Walker, who barely makes the cut, 79% rostership. He had his best start of the season today, right? 7 innings, only
1 hit
allowed, no earned runs, 8 strikeouts. The whiff rate's not very good. The walk rate's not very good. The ground ball rate's not very good. He still has a 397 xFIP, which I think could be a lot worse considering. But I don't know. He's a guy who's kind of defied the usual metrics for, he certainly did all of last year. So with a start against Baltimore, I'd definitely be comfortable running him out there. And then Johnny Cueto, he comes off the IL this weekend, Sunday. So we'll get to see if he makes it through that start okay. If he does, next week he'll be at Pittsburgh, which of course is another great matchup.
All right, so let's move on from the sleeper pitchers and let's get some sleeper hitters, Scott. These are names that are rostered in less than 80% of CBS leagues. Who are you looking at for week 7?
Okay, so I think I recommend him every other week, but CJ Cron has actually been hitting better the past couple weeks, and Rockies are home for all 7 games. And like I said, Coors, it's getting warmer there. It's starting to play more like Coors. I think CJ Cron is the top guy to look at. Of the 7 pitchers they're facing, 6 are righties. So Dom Nunez, definitely want to get him in the lineup. Garrett Hampson, Raimel Tapia, who's been hot, like a lot of Rockies this week. The Giants are one of the 2 teams. No, they don't visit Coors. Never mind. But the Giants have good matchups as well. I like Evan Longoria and Brandon Belt from their lineup. So who is visiting the Rockies? It's the Padres. I don't have any of those. And the Reds. Yeah, I don't have any of those either. Yeah, not a good time to... Not too good... Those aren't good rosters for picking sleeper hitters, apparently. A couple of hot hand plays here that I like because of their splits. Andrew Benintendi. Of course, he's been on a roll lately. The Royals are scheduled to face 6 righties in their 7 games. But really, it's the fact that they're on the road. If you look at his home away splits for this year, Benintendi's done much better on the road. Maybe it's just because he happened to get hot when they were on a road trip, but Kansas City not known for being a great place to hit. I think it's a little extra reason to consider using him. Andrew McCutchen tends to do much better against lefties. Phillies have 4 of those on the schedule. And he's been showing some signs of coming around. So I like Andrew McCutchen this week as well.
Alrighty, there you have it. And while we're on it, we'll just mention the 5 teams with the best hitter matchups. The Reds, the Astros, the Giants, the Padres, and the Rockies. We mentioned quite a few of those already. And the 5 teams with the worst hitter matchups in week 7 would be the Mariners, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Brewers, and the Dodgers. So there you go. The week 7 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Line and Kugels. And it's May 7th. I'm still waiting for the weather to heat up here in New York. It's supposed to be 50 degrees raining this weekend. What is going on? Anyway, you know what makes me feel like I'm sitting poolside on a warm, sunny day? A Line and Kugels Summer Shandy. It's this awesome blend of crisp beer with refreshing lemonade that fits perfectly when watching some baseball. And the Summer Shandy isn't all they offer. They also have a Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, but it's only 99 calories. And if you're into IPAs, Leinenkugel's offers their Lemon Haze IPA, which is a well-balanced hazy IPA that blends hops with delicious lemonade. So no matter what type of beverage you are craving, Leinenkugel's has you covered. Just head over to leinie.com. That's L-E-I-N-I-E.com. Or follow Leinenkugel's on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all the delicious beers that they brew. What do we do with these struggling players? Let's start things off with Carlos Correa, who is 0-for-19 over his last five games, and the batting average is now down to .254. Scott, any consideration with benching Carlos Correa? Would you be looking to buy him if you don't have him on your team?
Oh, I'd be looking to buy him. Yeah.
Agreed, 100%.
No, I think, gosh, so how many games has he been in a slump, you said?
His last five, he's 0-for-19.
Okay. Well, that'll happen this early in the season. You go 0-for-19, it'll put a dent in your batting average, but it's worth pointing out, less than a week ago, he was batting .303. That's the other side of the coin.
Yep.
And nobody should have had any reason to worry about Carlos Correa. So, yeah, no, I think Carlos Correa is fine. I think he's on the path to having a good rebound season. I'm not saying he's going to be a top five shortstop like we used to see him be, but I would still bet on top 12, certainly, and probably top 10.
Even with that .254 batting average, his XBA, according to StatCast, stands at .307. His expected slug is .497. So certainly looks like Carlos Correa is bouncing back so far this season. It's a contract year for him as well, if you're into that kind of narrative. Alec Bohm, he hit his fourth home run on Thursday. And the counting stats look all right. 14 runs scored, 16 RBI, 2 steals, but he's only batting .219, Scott. You were a big fan of Bohm last year coming into the season, what you saw in the minor leagues, but then you thought that the price coming into this year was too high. He was like a top 110, 120 pick in drafts mm-hmm. this season. What is going on with mm-hmm. Alec Bohm's batting average so far?
Well, he has been hitting the ball really hard. He has an expected batting average, XBA, of .277, so much higher than his actual season mark. So I guess that's reason to be encouraged, right? But a big part of what should make Alec Bohm tick is how disciplined a hitter he is. A lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts in the minors. It had me comparing him to guys like, I don't know, the extreme best case outcome was probably like Anthony Rendon. Not the most likely outcome, but you know, the extreme best case outcome. And like, that's not how his profiles looked here in the majors, especially this year. His strikeout rate is over 25%. His walk rate's only like 5%. So that's, you know, near the bottom of the league in terms of drawing walks. It could change. And you know, he could go on a walking streak. We see that happen sometimes where players play discipline suddenly looks a lot better. I don't know. The fact that he actually didn't hit for much power last year, I don't know. He seems pretty marginal at a deep position to me. I'd rather have him than Austin Riley, I guess, but I think they're in the same category in terms of how rostered they should be.
The issue for Bohm last year was that he had a very high ground ball rate, 53%. It's pretty similar so far this season, 49%. He is hitting the ball harder, and his expected numbers look a little bit better. So if you own Alec Bohm, I think you should keep him in the lineup. Those counting stats still look pretty good, and I would bet on the batting average bouncing back based on what he showed in the minors and what he did last year as well. He's not going to hit .338 like he did last year, but I certainly think he's better than a .219 hitter. I guess it's kind of weird to put Joey Gallo in this conversation because he's been better recently. He's not technically struggling right now. He was struggling before his last six games where he has six hits during that span, including two home runs. He's now up to four home runs on the season for Joey Gallo. But his batted ball data, Scott, is just all over the place. He's got a 39.6% ground ball rate. That's by far the highest of his career. 36% fly ball rate, by far the lowest. So, and his... this is quality of contact. StatCast, usually Joey Gallo's up there, you know, just hitting the ball as hard as anybody. That's really not the case this year. So I don't know that I can say for certain that he's going to bounce back and be Joey Gallo that we've seen. But yeah, it's just kind of been a weird season for him.
Yeah. I mean, he is the face of high variance to me.
Yes.
So he could hit 7 home runs the next 2 weeks and suddenly his numbers look a million times better. And probably he's a sell high at that point, right? So, I mean, to me, there's not really much benefit into digging into the StatCast data or the batted ball data or anything like that, because it's just, okay, clearly he's not on the right side of streaky right now. I'd feel more confident if, you know, the 60 games last year, he had a single hot stretch, but we knew going into last year too, that was probably going to play out one of two ways for Joey Gallo. Either he was going to hit 25 home runs in those 60 games, or he was going to hit however many he ended up hitting. And unfortunately, it was the latter end. So I don't know. I mean, you knew what you were getting into drafting Gallo. You probably were counting on him for a ton of home runs. If you're high in the home run rankings, even with as little as he's done so far, maybe you can afford to sit him till he shows signs of coming around. But otherwise, you know, talking a roto league, a 5 outfielder league, I think you just leave him there and trust in what you paid for.
The last name I wanted to mention here was Max Kepler. He hit his first home run of the season on Thursday. However, he's batting 200. He did test positive for COVID, so that could definitely be affecting him. But I feel like we're just kind of holding on to this 2019 season, Scott, for Max Kepler, where he had this 855 OPS, 36 home runs. Sure, fine, it was great. He's been 760 OPS or less every other season. He can hit lefties. He's still 91% rostered. And maybe you give him the benefit of the doubt. He's better in points leagues, but I just kind of feel like we're overvaluing him based on that 2019 when there was a juice ball.
Well, maybe. It was like he had 9 home runs in 48 games last year. So that's about a 30-homer pace, right?
But he did it with
about a 30-homer pace. What were you saying?
He did it with a 760 OPS, which is, you know, it's just
meh. Yeah. The batting average was low. He puts a ton of balls in the air. So he's a low BABIP guy. That's what he's kind of more developed into over the years in order to maximize his power potential. I don't know. It's really hard to assess. 2020, we've seen so many players bounce back from 2020 like it was nothing, like just completely rendered the 2020 number, the 2020 stat line obsolete, to the point that a player like this is like, okay, so we're saying the 2020 stat line matters for Kepler, but it doesn't matter for I don't know, Carlos Correa or whoever you want to point to who had an awful 2020 season. And then you got the added impact of him missing time with COVID-19, and we're not giving him a pass for that. Look, I'm not saying Max Kepler's undroppable in a 3 outfielder league. I think that's fine. But I'm not ready to write him off either. I suspect from today forward, he'll perform at about a 30-homer pace, probably with a batting average south of 250. But I guess I'm saying, I think if you drop Kepler now, well, it's totally fine in a 3 outfielder league. You got alternatives. He's probably not going to be a high-end player. At some point, somebody else will want to pick up Max Kepler because I think he will have a stretch that puts him back in that conversation.
Did you know both Marcus Semien and Bo Bichette each have 7 home runs and 6 stolen bases so far this season, which puts them, that is a pace of 35 homers and 30 steals over the course of 150 games. So I know we had some concerns whether or not Bo Bichette was going to run as much as other people did when, you know, he's being drafted in the second, you know, early third round in category leagues, but he's running. And so is Marcus Semien so far as well. So I've been completely wrong about Marcus Semien. I kind of just thought he was another one where he was just overvalued because of that 2019 season, but he's looked really good thus far. And now he's leading off, or he was at least leading off on Thursday for the Toronto Blue Jays. So it's a really good spot to be in.
I mean, Semien's a weird one to break down because prior to the 4-hit game today, he was hitting what, like 220? And had been there from the start. Obviously having 7 home runs, 6 stolen bases at this stage of the season, it's really good pace he's on for those counting stats.
That's the biggest thing, Scott, is that even with a lower batting average, he was still giving you so many counting stats, you know?
Well, okay, but if he continues to do it. I mean, his expected stats are about as low as it gets. Like, it's a Cavan Biggio situation.
Yeah. 199 expected batting average.
Yeah, and a 402 expected slug. So, you know, I'm not saying he can't outperform those. They're not gospel, obviously, but that's what the data says he should have. His numbers should look like right now. And I don't know. He outperformed them in the one season that really matters, 2019. So maybe he will again. But I think there's still reason to have skepticism for Semien. And if you want to consider him a sell high, obviously the emphasis is on the high, as always. It's not on the sell. Not just trying to dump him. Plenty of reason to keep starting him right now. But I don't know that we can count on him sustaining this pace.
Some leftovers from Thursday quickly mention happy birthday to Jose Altuve. He went 2-for-5 with a 3-run home run against my Bronx Bombers. Yordan Alvarez had 3 hits and a double dong himself. He's batting .337. Giancarlo Stanton extended his hitting streak to 12 games with his 9th home run of the season. It was his 3rd straight game with a home run. Jamer Candelario has back-to-back 3-hit games. He's batting .298 and is 53% rostered.
Now that's a guy I wanted to talk about. Candelario, okay. Because his batting average is up to
298
now, and that was after hitting over 300 last year. Now, if you look at the StatCast data for him, it's you know, not as bad as Semien, because it doesn't get much worse than Semien, but it shows him hitting 230 something Candelario for the season. But I, you know, going a little old school here, I'm looking at line drive rate for Candelario.
Scott, hold on. You can't do that, man. It's StatCast or nothing nowadays.
Well, I can. I can and I will. Because Candelario's line drive rate is approaching 30%, which is unbelievable. That's where you see like Freddie Freeman and Whit Merrifield. That's the best kind of line drive rates in the league. And obviously line drives are the sort of hits, are the sort of batted balls that are most likely to result in hits by pretty considerable margin. And that's how you get a 370-ish BABIP or whatever Candelario is working with right now, as you hit that many line drives. Line drive rate was good last year too. Better this year. But, you know, the two-year trend of being a good line drive hitter has me thinking maybe he can be a good batting average source. And it wasn't just a fluke last year, despite what StatCast is saying. What kind of XBA StatCast is giving him now?
Nick Gordon, former first-round pick for the Minnesota Twins way back when in 2014, appeared in his first major league game on Thursday. He went 1-for-2 with a walk and 2 steals. Luis Arraez is on the 7-day concussion IL. So just remember the name in deepest leagues, Nick Gordon. If you play in AL-only category leagues, you might actually want to pick him up. Cesar Hernandez has 7 hits over his last 5 games, including a home run. Randall Grichuk went 2-for-5 with his 6th homer of the season. He's batting .306 with an .858 OPS. 67% rostered is Grichuk and should play every day with George Springer out once again. The call to the pen on Thursday for the Red Sox. Adam Ottavino picked up his first save with Matt Barnes pitching the previous 2 days. Taylor Rogers was used in the 8th inning in a tie game, but was facing 2 lefties. He struck out the side. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz allowed 2 hits, picked up his 4th save. Yimi Garcia got his 5th save. Will Smith got his 7th for the Braves. And for Cleveland, in a 4-zip game, James Karinchak came in the 8th inning. He faced 9-1, 2-3. And Emmanuel Class A pitched in the 9th. Streamers for the weekend, Scott, your favorite part of the podcast. Let's start with Friday. Choose 3 of these names. Zach Davies versus the Pirates. Wade Miley at Cleveland. David Peterson versus Arizona. Matt Shoemaker at the Tigers. Mike Foltynewicz versus the Mariners. And Anthony DeSclafani versus the Padres.
Okay. Don't love it. Don't love any of it. Don't love any of it at all. Okay. I mean, I guess I'm going to recommend DeSclafani just because I think he's the best pitcher. Don't feel good about it, though. Wade Miley at Cleveland. No, you know what? David Peterson versus Arizona. DeSclafani versus San Diego, Peterson versus Arizona, and then Wade Miley at Cleveland.
I do like Wade Miley. an okay amount. That's how I'll phrase it. For Saturday, Carlos Martinez versus the Rockies in St. Louis. Trevor Williams versus the Pirates in a revenge game. Garrett Richards at the Orioles. Daniel Lynch versus the White Sox. Vince Velasquez at the Braves. And Adrian Hauser at the Marlins. I'm going to start including the White Sox in here because their lineup is pretty depleted now.
I would go with Carlos Martinez versus the Rockies, though that's really mostly about the matchup. I know he's had some good starts recently, but I'm not buying into Carlos Martinez in general. I'll go with Garrett Richards at Baltimore. Actually, I think I like him a little more than Martinez. Richards at Baltimore, Martinez versus Colorado, and the third will be Williams versus Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was eyeing Williams or Hauser. Which one is Scott going to go
with?
For Sunday, Nick Pivetta at the Orioles, Eric Lauer at the Marlins, Adam Wainwright versus the Rockies, Tyler Anderson at the Cubs. Yep. Cole Irvin versus Tampa Bay, and Johnny Cueto versus the Padres.
So I'm not really buying into Irvin either. I'll go Adam Wainwright versus the Rockies, number one, Nick Pivetta at Baltimore, number two, and number three, Tyler Anderson at the Cubs.
Let's wrap up the week, Scott, with some fantasy justice for all. This is replacing formerly known as the Regulator segment that you guys used to do here on the podcast. We can no longer play the Regulator's music for copyright reasons, but if you're having an issue with your league, commissioner, it's not fantasy related, right? It's not, do I make this trade, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, something weird that's going on in your league. Email us, put fantasy justice in the subject line. So let's serve it up, Scott.
Man.
This one's
from People's Court here.
This one's from David, the commissioner of our league. 2 weeks into the season, dropped Anthony Rizzo when he was playing like hot garbage. I instantly put in a waiver pick for him. 2 hours and 17 minutes later, my waiver pickup was gone, and he was magically back on his team and never mentioned anything to the league. I pointed it out, and he claims he never dropped him, and it would have to had been an accident, so he re-added him to his team. This is the process he would have needed to do to, quote, accidentally drop him. Unlock his phone via Face ID or passcode, scroll and find Yahoo app, click into app, click my team, find Rizzo, click Rizzo's name, go to the bottom of screen, click drop, confirm you want to drop Rizzo. I should also mention he is notorious for sketchy trades. What should we do?
Oh, that's added information. Because I was going to say, you know, I don't know how long this league has been in existence, how long this guy's been commissioner. But something you really have to keep in mind as a commissioner is, like, you need to be squeaky clean. Like, you need to never be put yourself in a position where you're going to be accused of using your commissioner powers to benefit yourself, so that when you make an honest mistake, the league actually believes it's an honest mistake, because it's too easy to think it's not if you haven't developed that reputation of being an honorable commissioner. I think accidental drops happen. The process you described there with the phone and everything, I mean, not everybody plays fantasy on their phone, and you don't know what's going on in their head when they're like, they may be absentmindedly clicking things, thinking about something else, and they meant to drop another Anthony, like Anthony Desclafani or something, and they were just, you know, distracted while they were doing it and clicked the wrong guy. Like, I think that can totally happen. But you're saying this guy has a reputation for being kind of sketch anyway. It doesn't help. I don't know what you can really do about it.
I think you and your league mates should go protest outside of his house until he drops Anthony Rizzo or trades him to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean,
this is pretty sketchy, man.
All you can do is gather a group of people who are as frustrated with you are and petition for a change in commissioner and you know, see if he goes for it. And somebody will have to want to step up and do it, because commissioner's a pretty thankless job, you know? You know, the ultimate card to play is, all right, I'm out of the league, but then you don't get to play in the league anymore. So you gotta decide how much it bothers you, I guess. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but
sketchy, man. Yeah. You got to do something about that, because even as a commissioner myself in multiple leagues, I would just have a guilty conscience if I did something like that. You know, like, I agree with you, Scott. You have to be squeaky clean. You just can't do stuff like this. If you're the commissioner, it's not right. So get him out. This one's from Joel. I have been shopping around Anthony Rizzo in my league. I have too many good bets. I had an owner, let's call him Murray, agree to a trade for him over text. Then later he pulled back and asked for a lower price. I reluctantly agreed to the new lower price. Then he pulled back again, asking for Corbin Burns to be added to the deal at no additional cost. I am frustrated at Murray for not honoring his word. When twice we had a deal agreed upon, my league has a 3-strikes-and-you're-out policy for fantasy managers, usually relating to managers remaining active. Should this count as a strike for Murray?
No, I don't think a deal is agreed to until the deal is clicked on and accepted, until it, you know, actually goes through.
That's bad. That's bad fantasy etiquette though, Scott. That is.
No, I agree. You're this guy is making it so you don't want to trade with him next time. So that's the consequence for him, is you're not going to be as motivated to do a deal with him next time because he's going to be flaky like this. But it's not technically a violation for him to do it. It's just annoying.
Yep. I agree. I don't think it should be a strike for that person in your league, for Murray, let's call him. But yeah, it's bad fantasy etiquette. Fantasy karma is coming his way. I will say that. Fantasy karma is a real thing. You do something like this, something bad is going to happen to your team. I've seen it happen way too many times in my life. So no strikes there, but it's bad. This last one's from Tony. As a 20-year player of fantasy baseball, I've finally hit my breaking point. Please tell me if I'm being a fantasy snob or if I am justified. We are in a fairly deep league. 12 teams, 5 outfielders, 8 pitchers, 3 IL spots. Should give you a decent basis. A player in our league has dropped 14 of their first 20 picks, and 7 of those were their first 10 picks. Half of those drops happened after week 1 and 2. He has dropped the likes of Gleyber Torres to pick up Jose Iglesias. He dropped Kyle Hendricks to pick up Kyle Gibson. Jesus Luzardo to pick up Jay Happ. Giancarlo Stanton to pick up Avisael Garcia. I believe this is a real issue because his drops are saving other teams' rosters. No one seems to care except myself. The stance is he paid his money so he can do what he wants. If this was football and someone dropped Aaron Rodgers for Drew Locke after week 1, they would lose their friggin' minds.
So you're saying they don't know fit baseball as well? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe.
They take fantasy football more seriously. You should take fantasy baseball more seriously, for goodness sakes. It's a bigger investment and less reliant on luck. But anyway,
this is kind of tough because I do, on one hand, I agree that if this person paid money and these are the moves that they want to make, even though, I mean, you see what Giancarlo Stanton is doing now, you know, who are we to say? If this person winds up winning the league doing this and just riding the hot hand all season, then all the power to them. But
yeah, no,
you are making other teams better by allowing them to pick up someone like Stanton.
It doesn't reflect well on the quality of the league. Like, you shouldn't just invite anybody to play in your fantasy baseball league. I understand I have an endless pool of potential players to draw from and not everybody's in that situation. But like, don't invite him back next year. I mean, I don't know. Is it his first year playing and he's going to learn some lessons? Like, you know, maybe he'll turn out to be a great fantasy player if that's the case and he's just taking his lumps now. So you got to keep that in mind too. But
yeah,
you got to let him make his mistakes and, I don't know. I try to find a league with more seasoned players in it if you don't want to encounter this again.
I don't think you could do anything about it, but yeah, look, if he keeps helping other people win and his team is terrible come the end of season, kick him out. He's gone. Alrighty. I think justice has been served. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye! If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.